But right now, I'm very happy to welcome back to our program Joel Bleifuss, editor and publisher of In These Times. He's the former director of the Peace Studies Program at the University of Missouri, Columbia. And Joel is co-author of the book, Was the 2004 Presidential Election Stolen?, co-written with Stephen Freeman. Joel, it's great to have you on the program again. Thanks for coming.
Glad to be here.
So it's a big question, but I figured I'd leave the canvas blank for you. Provide our listeners with a bit of an overview of the election results last Tuesday, where Democrats lost control of the U.S. Senate, lost more than a dozen seats in the House of Representatives. I think it's the lowest number of Democrats in the House in many, many decades. The party also lost governor's seats and state houses as well. There were some referendum questions where progressives won out, and we can review some of those as well. But maybe I know you've been thinking about this in terms of the content of In These Times and what kind of assessments and analysis that you're publishing. But what are some of your thoughts?
Well, I think, first, the president's approval ratings are very low, and historically, when a president's approval ratings are low, that follows into a loss for his party in Congress and in elections generally. I think, but that then raises the question, why are his approval ratings low? And I think there are several interesting answers that at least hypotheses that one could make about that. You look at Obamacare and the Democrats, and I would say even the White House in some way ran away from that issue and allowed themselves to be attacked. When while certainly it was not a perfect bill and the rollout was flawed, for many people, especially those with pre-existing conditions, for the first time in their lives they can have affordable insurance. I think the Democrats should have been going on the offensive with this. I think you also have to realize that in midterms, it's the party's most active base that turns out. And I think that, at least on the progressive side of the Democratic Party, people were disillusioned with Obama, particularly around sort of national surveillance state that we seem to be morphing into. So there was a lack of excitement on the part of the Democratic base. You can see that in sort of the opposite, which is the excitement that does exist around candidates or politicians like Elizabeth Warren, who gets people energized, sort of speaks to a cross-section of the American public. And there are very few Democrats that are using her language that are, in a sense, being populist, to the detriment of the party, and I think that showed up in the election.
Yeah, I definitely want to talk more about Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, topics that you discussed in a recent election analysis piece in These Times. There was a lot of discussion before the election of voter suppression laws that were put in place by essentially Republican-controlled state governments, gerrymandered districts that have been around since the 2010 election, the flood of dark money in U.S. election campaigns, primarily corporation money, corporate money going into Republican campaigns. I'm wondering, as you look at these issues, Are these substantive issues that account for some of the losses here, or would it be a mistake to assign too much importance to these?
I think the money question, while it's certainly true that, as in past years, the candidate who spent the most was more likely to win, and that favors incumbents because they have a spending, at least a fundraising advantage, analysis of expenditures by the Sunlight Foundation found that sort of across the board, no matter how much Democrats spent, they failed to win seats, and the Republicans who spent about the same amount were very successful in winning seats. And I think that goes back to the whole question of messaging and the perception that the president and the Democratic Party were not able to govern and were not able to sort of speak to people's aspirations. You look at the economy, and certainly while the unemployment rate has gone down, I think, to the lowest point since July 2007, I believe, maybe it's 2008, people's income has not kept up with inflation if you look at the past 25 years or so. So in a real sense, I think people have a good reason to feel a little bit jaundiced about their economic possibilities and their future, and particularly young people, which I think young people between 18 and 24 have a 14% unemployment rate. We saw the proportion of young voters fall from 19% in 2012 to 13% in this past midterms. That's a 6% drop. And I think that's an indication of how much young people feel invested or not invested in the future of their country.
Joel, when it comes to economic issues, there's certain analysis that says that the Republicans have executed an obstructionist agenda in both the House and Senate. And I'm wondering, when it comes to pushing forward economic policies that would have helped a majority of the American people, did the Obama administration try, and then the Republican House and the filibuster-proof Senate successfully obstruct those initiatives? Or do you blame in part the Obama administration for really not addressing economic inequality issues as they may have?
Well, they could have addressed economic inequality issues by acknowledging that those issues exist and letting people know that they were that they understood why people were not particularly happy with how things were going in the country. There's this very interesting Hart poll from October, which said that given a choice between Republicans who promised to grow the economy and a Democrat who supported, quote, creating an economy that works for everyone, not just the wealthy few, that second statement, swing voters, because of that second statement, swing voters would pick Democrats by 22%. So I think that if there had been a more populist economic message in the campaign that had, you know, been sort of shouted from the White House to the congressional districts, people might have thought differently. And there's a long history of polling that shows that if one appeals to a voter's pocketbook and does so in sort of populist terms, that can be a very successful political strategy for winning over sort of the middle segment of the electorate. Instead, you had the Democrats doing the same thing they've always done, which is sort of appealing to this segment of the population with this appeal, say women on the issue of reproductive choice, or another segment on another appeal. And so I think there was a sort of running away from the core economic message that things are not fair and they need to be made fairer.
We're speaking with Joel Bleifuss this evening on Counterpoint. Joel is the editor and publisher of In These Times, based in Chicago. And Joel, I guess what you're saying here really begs the question, why is it that Democratic Party strategists shied away from an economic populist message? Why didn't they really try to drive out their base to come to the polls with an acknowledgement that economic inequality was something that was a priority for the administration and the legislators who were vying for office? Why is it that the Democrats shy away from that issue?
Well, I think partly they don't understand it. You know, it's been explained to me, and I think this is plausible, that political consultants come from a certain background, a certain class background, and they sort of have a lack of understanding for how regular working people think about the economy and think about their place within society. And you know, especially pollsters who do work for labor unions and who are sort of more engaged in crafting appeals that relate to working people, you know, have long said that the Democratic messaging and the whole sort of political consulting industry fails to understand what motivates people to vote. I think that's a pretty accurate sort of sentiment. If you look at white working men went overwhelmingly for Democrats in this election, sort of outstripping the gender gap that went the other way with women voting for Democrats. I mean, that white men went for Republicans over Democrats. And so, you know, why is it that such a, you know, a majority of white working class men in this, I would argue, voted against their own economic interests? That raises sort of hard questions that I think the Democratic establishment sort of ignores to its own peril.
Indeed. Joel, labor unions have historically played an important role in bankrolling Democratic Party campaigns and supplying the ground game with volunteers to knock on doors and do mail drops and the like. What do you think Labor's position coming out of this election is, given the fact that they've been hemorrhaging membership for decades now across the country, and they are under severe attack in many states, including Wisconsin and Ohio and Michigan, where collective bargaining of public employees has been attacked by these Republican governors?
Well, I think these attack on this, especially it's the public sector unions, which are the fastest growing or the only growing sector of the union movement in the United States. And maybe part of it is there's this ideological distaste on the part of Republican, at least the sort of strategist. But I think a larger point is that they understand that if the public sector unions can be in any way neutered and sort of hamstrung, that benefits Republicans because there's less effort going into elections. There's less money. If there are all these laws or attempted laws that the Republicans are sort of want to get on the books, which would in a sense defund unions' political action committees by making every member of a union have to agree that their money could be used, their dues money that goes to politics, be used for a political purpose. And you know, once the unions are in a sense defunded, or you know, one hand is tied behind their back, the privatization of I would say public institutions can move forward largely unimpeded in that there's a lot of money to be had with the privatization of what used to be the public sector, which in general has fairly high paying jobs and job security and when those, you look at Chicago with say the parking meters or the tollways, when those were privatized, the people who were working in those industries lost their government jobs and their union protections.
Joel, any bright spots that you see in this election for progressive politics and progressive activism, such as some of the referendum results?
Well, there's some great referendums. I mean, Arkansas voted to raise the minimum wage, and then they voted for a Republican senator who opposed that. Colorado voted against a personhood amendment to the Constitution, and then voted for a senator who had supported such an amendment previously. So I think if you look at how the public voted on issues in these referendums, there was a lot of stuff to be heartened by. You know, unfortunately, that didn't translate into a victory for candidates. And I still go back to the fact that I think, though, you know, probably the Democrats had an uphill battle just based on being the midterms and that the party itself is to blame for sort of not fighting and not defending the president and, in a sense, hanging him out to dry. And while certainly he can be criticized for a number of things, the reason the economy is, you could argue the reason that it's, functioning at least much better than it was when he took office is because of the policies of the administration.
Right. We're speaking tonight with Joel Bleifuss, editor and publisher of In These Times, and we'll give everyone the web address after we conclude here so people can see the stories we're talking about. Joel, in terms of the big issues that have got your attention that will be addressed in Congress in these next 2 years of a majority Republican Congress, what are some of the things that concern you in terms of the predictable attacks on Obamacare, efforts at tax reform, any possible vacancies in the Supreme Court and appointments to the federal court?
Well, I think with the Republican Party having a lock on the Senate, they can deny any federal judge for the next 2 years. Who knows what is going to happen with Ruth Bader Ginsburg? She's in her 80, 81, 82. She's been treated for two types of cancer. I'm not saying that she's on. Maybe she'll go on for a long time, but there is a chance that within 2 years there could be another opening on the Supreme Court, and this would be under Obama's watch. He'd have a chance to nominate somebody, but could whoever he nominates ever get through the Senate? I doubt it. And that goes for a whole slew of other nominations. And so I think the president will be hamstrung, and he can't veto legislation, so I think that the health care reform will, if it survives the Supreme Court, will stay in place, but I don't see the Republicans doing a huge lot of damage other than obstructing things.
And you think President Obama will hold fast in terms of using his veto pen to prevent some of the more objectionable policies from being signed into law, objectionable to progressives?
I would hope so. I mean, maybe this turnout will give him some courage that it's sort of, in my opinion, he's perhaps lacked in the past. He came out with a great statement very recently in strong support of net neutrality. So there are things that he's said recently that are very positive.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, he's in China today and touting the need for greater trade regimes to open up, quote-unquote, open up trade between countries of the world, which has been going on unfettered for 20 years to the detriment, I think, of many working people in this country.
Yeah, the Trans-Pacific Free Trade Agreement will certainly get a boost with the Republicans taking over the Senate.
Yeah, exactly. And what does that secret agreement, which nobody has really seen, what does it say? What does it portend for the ability of this country or other countries to pass laws that protect their industries or protect their people?
Well, Joel, just a final question here. As the midterm election ended, the starting gun for the 2016 presidential race began, and Hillary Clinton certainly is a front runner, but many progressives are somewhat disappointed with her leadership, given that she's got close ties to Wall Street. She's viewed as a militarist, being for George W. Bush's Iraq War. But there are other leaders in the Democratic Party, such as Elizabeth Warren, whom you mentioned, and Bernie Sanders, Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who are thinking about, or they're being asked about, and in the case of Sanders, is thinking about a run for the presidency, maybe to challenge Hillary Clinton in a future primary. How important is this in terms of the direction of the progressive movement in this country?
Well, I think it's vital, and I mean, the heartening news is that Warren seemed to keep the door open in a People Interview magazine in October when she said she didn't think that she would be running, but she said, you never know what's going to happen in the future. Her quote was, I don't think so, but if there's any lesson I've learned in the last 5 years, it's don't be so sure about what lies ahead. There are amazing doors that could open. So I would certainly think it would be a great boost to have a real sort of nomination fight in 2015 and 2016. I'm absolutely certain that Bernie Sanders is going to throw his hat in the ring. I think that he's been indicating that he's thinking about this seriously. He's traveling around the country, and certainly if he does, he'll be raising issues that need to be raised and the Democrats need to be discussing. I think it could be an exciting year. And, you know, Hillary, I just fail to see how she can excite sort of the base of the party other than a certain segment that is extremely fond of her and always has been.
Do you think a primary challenge to Hillary Clinton by Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren would effectively push Hillary Clinton's policies in a 2016 presidential election campaign to the left?
I would hope so, yes. And I think that's what this country needs. It needs a push from the left. And we've had this very exerted push from the right in the form of the Tea Party and the Cruz sort of folks in the Senate for 6 years now. And it's not been answered in any forceful way other than by a few elected members of Congress. Sherrod Brown in Ohio, Sanders in Vermont, Elizabeth Warren. I mean, there are, I think, really good outspoken Democrats, but on the other side, there are some who I would say are too mealy-mouthed.
Okay. Well, Joel, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts about the election campaign that many of us would rather sooner forget, but we got to assess what happened here and know how to go forward. So thanks so much. And do leave our listeners with the web address for In These Times and any other information on coming features.
Yeah, it's inthesetimes.com. Very easy, and we have a lively site that's updated daily.
Yeah, and you've got some great articles about the election, too. So.
Oh, well, thank you, yeah.
And
a Democrat, or a guy saying why he didn't vote for Quinn as governor, the Democratic nominee for governor, or candidate for governor in Illinois because of his pension. So I think we have a variety of voices.
And I'll advise listeners to look for your article as well, titled The Lesson from the Midterms, Elizabeth Warren Should Run in 2016, by our guest Joel Bleifuss. Well, thanks again, Joel. We'll look forward to having you back from time to time to talk more about these kinds of issues. Thanks.
Look forward to it.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
That's Joel Bleifuss, editor and publisher of In These Times, taking a look at the results of the 2014 midterm elections. And we're going to be talking more about the economic issues of the election, or I should say the issues that were really not debated in the election, as we touched on with Joel, with our next guest, Sam Pizzicati. He'll be here in just a moment. In the meantime, a little music to take us to our next guest. This is Counterpoint here on WPKN in Bridgeport.
It is! While they're digging through your trash, tax man come to remove your cash. They talk of the future like a criminal plans, corporate robberies in far off lands. They tell you the future's a big wonderland, and that homeland security's got a career for you. Don't you believe they told you before? It's the
that you ain't insane. I wouldn't believe this is all coming true if I could not see with my eyes as true. Even still, I hope the future gets here soon. Lock you away. They tell you that war is a permanent thing, and American Idol kids really can sing. Pieheads on a rescue mission, put your cancer in remission. People starving, malnutrition, work your abs into condition. Oh no, now they're after your soul, and they're telling you now that you're losing control. But it's true.